Kof Tes Kislev, Hey Chanukah, Monday the 22nd of December, Rabbi Malcolm Herman, Overcoming Darkness.
I think it's an inevitable aspect of the human condition. And when we first start a new Chag, a new Yom Tov, so the first day is with excitement, with anticipation. By the time you get to the other side of the menorah, day five, it's not so easy to maintain the same level of inspiration. Even though in our family there's a minhag that on day one we have one donut, and day two we have two donuts, Derech Beis Hillel. But nonetheless, of course, the opposite should be the case. That the more we feel the Chag, the more the Chag progresses, so Vezos Chanukah should be an absolute climax of the Chag. We should imbibe and absorb and internalize the ideas of the Chag. So one of the ideas I'd like to share with you, if I'm able to, is through the eyes of Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler's analysis, one of his mamorim on Chanukah. Really, and it's on the topic of overcoming darkness. You know, darkness is also an inevitable aspect of life. It's interesting, Rav Hutner notes, interesting observation. It says in Pashas B'Chukosai, "Menasati Mishkani B'Sochachem, Lo Sigal Nafshi Eskan." I will place my base of Middosh within you, and I will not reject you, repudiate you. And that's in the section of Brachos. It's a strange bracha. I'm going to put my base of Middosh within your midst, and good news, I'm not going to reject you. I'm not going to repudiate you. It should say, I will embrace you, I'll make you feel close. Says Rav Hutner that the reality is that darkness is part of life. It's an inevitable a consequence of Ahir Erevei Boker. There are times when we feel motivated and inspired, times when we feel despondent or even despairing. Therefore, the bracha in the future will be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us the Beis HaMikdash, and there will be no need anymore to go through the back and forth, the distance and proximity with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It will all be just Nasati Mishkani Mesochem, and this whole cycle, the human condition, will be cancelled. Now, Rav Dessler asks three questions. They're classic questions on Chanukah. His approach is slightly different. Question number one, of course, is that, as we know, that in reality, the principle of halacha, onus rachmona patra. In situations of extenuating circumstances, so a person is exonerated from their halachic obligations. So over here in the Nes Chanukah, they had enough oil for one day. The reality was that they were potter from any further attempt to try and find oil. They should have done what they had to do, and the rest was nothing to do with them at all. So his question is not why. His question is as follows. Why did Hashem perform a nace for them? It was a redundant nace. Kodesh Baruch Hu does not perform a nace for no reason whatsoever. There has to be a salvation for Klal Yisrael or another good reason, but over here it was a completely redundant nace. They had fulfilled their obligation of halacha 100%. So what was the need for a nace? What was the purpose of the nace? What was the nace coming to tell us? And in a similar vein, of course, we know, and we've spoken about this before here, Tumot Rebbe Tzibur. In a situation where the whole community is contaminated, then again the rules of purity are suspended, and one can perform the avodah despite the atmosphere of contamination. So again, there was no need for that extension. There was no need for them to use the pure oil. Why did Hashem perform the nace? His third question is a little more esoteric. We know that numbers are very significant. Number six is the number that appertains to our world. The 6 days of creation, that's the number that describes the world of physicality and the world of reality. Number seven is a little bit beyond Shabbos. Number seven describes the world which is associated to this world, but touching the world of Ruchnius, where there is a blend, there is a fusion, there's a synthesis between the world of physicality and the world of spirituality. That's what number seven represents. Hence Shabbos, which is the climax of the week, but also part of the week. On the other hand, number eight is when it's beyond completely. Beyond is completely spiritual, completely ruchnius, and it doesn't really touch this world at all. It doesn't connect with this world at all. There's no real connecting point with this world. Yet we see that Chanukah is an eight-day chag. So he asks, how can it be, first of all, it's a chag midrabbanon, but how can it be that, that somehow or other, the Chanukah is so lofty and so sublime that it even allows us to introduce the dimension of eight into the world of six and seven? How can it be? What was there within Chanukah that was so sublime that allowed us to somehow or other infuse eight into the world of seven and six? Those are his questions. He begins with a principle, very, very fascinating principle, which is really based on the Maharal's introduction to his Sefer Gevuros Hashem. There are two types of ways in which a person can perceive. What he calls a hasoga panimius, an internal perception, and a saga, Plutonius, an external perception. What does that mean? In English, I put it in these terms, though it's more of a mushel. Let's take the difference between intellect and intuition. Intellect and intuition. Intuition is that internal sense. Internal. Intellect is external. It's a person who rationalizes, he conceptualizes it external rather than internal. And we all recognize the difference between intuition and intellect. I'll give you a mushel. You know, when you're going, let's say, if unfortunately you're schlepped to the January sales to buy that suit, you know, that your wife says you've been putting off for too long. And you want to get the experience over and done with as soon as possible. And you find one where your arms go in, your legs go in, it's more or less the right colour. And it's, you know, cheaper than you anticipated. You want to get in and out of the house and the shopping in 5 minutes. Very nice, thank you very much. And your wife says to you, it doesn't look right. Why? It seems to look right. That's intellect versus intuition. According to you, it's done everything it's supposed to do, covers all the essential parts, and you've done the job. Intuition says it doesn't look right. Intuition, actually, or hasoga panimius, as Avesta calls it, very interesting, can only be based on something that you have experienced already. You can't have intuition about something for which you've had no previous experience at all. Whereas intellect, in the area of hasoga chitzonius, in a seichel, you can conceptualize, you can think about, or even describe that which we have no experience. Marshall, none of us could really understand what it means to be in space, where we are weightless. We could describe what it might be in intellectual terms, we could describe the challenges it might present, but we can't really feel what it can be at all, because none of us have had any experience that relates in any respect to that experience. So hasoga panimius presupposes that a person has some level of experience of something similar. Then you can have an intuition as to what it might be. Whereas intellect goes, in certain respects, beyond intuition. You can describe even that which one has not experienced. You can describe even that which one has not experienced. Now, so we can describe what it might be like to be in a weightless situation, weightless atmosphere. We can describe the challenges, but we can't really feel it. So in some respects, intuition has an advantage over intellect in that it's internal, it feels deeper, it resonates to a greater degree. On the other hand, intellect has an experience beyond intuition in that it gives us a broader scope of description beyond intuition. Says the Gemara in Baba Basra, Chacham Adif Min Navi. A Chacham has an advantage over a Navi. What does that mean? Says Rav Dessa, Chacham uses the methodology of intellect. A Navi uses the methodology of hasoga panimius. That's why a Navi is called a roya or a choza. A Navi is called somebody who sees. You can't see unless there's some kind of association with it. You can't see something which isn't there. You can't see that which is not there. A chacham is described as the one who uses seichel. So in certain respects, a chacham odif manavi. A chacham has a broader range of possibilities to describe life beyond that which a navi has. Because a navi is limited by the hasoga panimius, by the methodology that he uses, by the terminology that he relates to, which is intuition. Or, it's not really intuition, it's more than intuition, but it's internal rather than the external tools. So therefore, a chacham is odif manavi. And he quotes the Maharal in his Hakdama to the Sefer. Maharal explains, that's why it is that in fact, the Torah makes no reference, no real direct reference to Olam Haba, or to Gan Eden, or to Gehenim even, no reference at all. Listen to his words, if I may. Ki hefresh yesh min ha-chochma, bein ha-chochma and nevuah. There's a distinction between chochma, wisdom and nevuah. Ki ha-chochma yasig mitzitzet mitzat zichlo. A chochma will grasp it via his intellect. U'mekiven shu yasig mitzat zichlo, yochot lahasig ha-dvorim ha-ne'olomim. And because he uses the intellect, he can actually conceptualize ideas that are beyond us. By an historian, b'yosa, even more in some respects than a Navi. And a Navi, yikrochoza. A Navi is called a seer or a roya. Sheshayach roya b'mashu roya hadavim b'machutz. Roya presupposes you can actually see it. You can actually have some direct association with it. Therefore, Torah l'chol Navi his dafkus b'dava l'ashen v'wasabai. A Navi needs to have some association, some direct association or direct experience of it before a Navi can put it into words. How that works with all the Nevuahs of Tanakh, I don't know. But that's the principle he presents to us. And therefore, the reason why the Torah does not describe the unseeable, that which is physically unseeable, that which is physically unknowable, is because the Torah was given by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Navi. And that was his predominant characteristic. And therefore, that's all left to Torah Shebaal Peh. Where the Torah of the Chachamim, if you like, Torah Shebaal Peh, describes that which is beyond us. Now, clearly, when it came to Hanukkah in some respects, the world of Ruchani, which is the world of the unseeable, the world of eight, which is one of the questions we began, connected with the world of seven, was introduced into the world of seven. So how did that happen? How could it be that a person is able somehow or other to introduce the unseeable into the world of that which is knowable in physical terms? That's Rav Dessler's kasha. Rav Dessler says that just as in intellect there is asoga pnimius and asoga chitzonius, there is the external and the internal, so in a person's actions as well. Some of our actions are driven purely by the external. We do. We do what we have to do, whether we are connected with it or not. But of course, we have an internal. We have an internal motivation. What he calls that which is below the subconscious. And the, below the subconscious is the panemius, that which really drives a human being. So sometimes we are performing actions where the panemius is not connected. And sometimes the panemius drives our actions. Ultimately, of course, most of our actions will be driven by the subconscious. We may not realize it. But if you observe a person over a period of time, you'll be able to see that which really motivates them and that which really drives them forward. And the challenge for this is in the challenge in all areas of midas. Because it's very difficult. A person has an external of patience, maybe an internal of anger. A person has an external of humility, but an internal of covered. Very difficult to rein in the internal. But it becomes vital so to do, because otherwise, ultimately, the internal will drive our general direction in life. Sometimes you see it, sometimes in people, that the externality of humility. But, you know, they'll get upset. If they don't get shtishy this week, they'll get upset to whatever they wanted to get. Well, that happened. There seems to be the external, because ultimately the subconscious will determine our actions. So how can one rein in the subconscious? How can one make it one's servant and not one's master? So he quotes very beautifully from Yisrael Salanter. Ma yase adam im eila kechosav panimius. What should a person do with these internal strengths? Asher inenu yodea behem. He may not even be aware of them. Ubilti margish osam. Doesn't feel them. Ki ulai yesh bekocham limshal olav habra. But they have the capacity to drive him forward, yosim echitonius, more than the external. So Chazal gives Divrei Nechumim. And he quotes the Gemara from L'kachodiyah Chazal. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozer Lo. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps a person on every day. And as the Gemara says, that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't help a person, then the internal would ultimately drive everything. So what must a person do? L'takin o l'hadbir negdo HaKochas HaPnimiyus B'Shemes Gomer. A person must do one's absolute utmost with complete conviction in the external world. Person must act even where the internal doesn't appear to match up. Person must drive forward with the externality, with what the actions one has to do. For Akrashis is Tadluso Tolios to Takanachetonios, but Tachlis Ashlemus. To do everything one possibly can to do what one's supposed to do, and ultimately, as we know, the external actions will change, will fashion, will form the internal motivation. So that if one does that with absolute and complete conviction, then eventually the internal will become the servant of the external rather than become the driver of the external. But what it takes is complete and utter absolute conviction. Even when one doesn't necessarily feel motivated, still to do. Complete and utter conviction, still to do. With this, and that's what happens in the area of actions. In the area of actions, we can rein in the internal by acting externally. The question is, can the same thing happen in the area of intellect as well? But first, a very famous Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yud Gimel, the Gemara Machlokes Beishamai Meisinot, says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Shtei Shalim Umechta, for 2.5 years, Nachleku Beishamai Meisinot. Beishamai Meisinot debated. Halalu Omrim, they said, Noyach Lolo Adam Shalom Nivra. Yosem Mishnivra. It would have been better had a person not been created rather than being created. Being here in this world is so fraught with spiritual danger, it would have been better for the neshama had the neshama been left in the world of the ethereal, the world of the ruchani, and not been created. Halalu Omrim, they said, the opposite. No, better a person had been created rather than not created. Here there was a consensus, many, many different pshats from this Gemara. I think we've actually spoken about it once before, different pshats. Nimnu v'gomru, neuchlo l'adam shlo nivra mishnivra mishnivra. A remarkable conclusion. The conclusion is, it would have been better had we not been created. Better had we not been created, or mefarshim ask, what does that mean? It can't be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made a mistake. But achshav shenivra, now a person has been created, yifashmish for myself, he should analyze his actions, omri no yimashmish for myself, slightly different nuance over here.
He should analyse his actions and think about what he's doing. Remarkable Gemara, some kind of debate about the purpose of creation, that I should make a mistake, not make a mistake, and the Gemara's conclusion is, better had a person not been created. So, Psalm Lant explains as follows. This is not a Gemara, this is not a debate about whether creation of Adam was a good idea. Of that there can be no debate, Kol Shebroch Hu created. Not a debate about that at all. The debate is, everybody agrees that it was a good idea and right for us. The shaila is, how do we motivate ourselves? It's a question about what is it that motivates the human being. In fact, as Rav Desta puts it, this Gemara is discussing what is the antidote to Yish. What is the antidote to Yish? Yish is despair. Yish is when a person feels darkness, an internal darkness. Yish is when a person feels demotivated. What's the best way overall to educate people to think about life such that they can remain motivated and find motivation even in those moments of darkness? Subeis Hillel, Kedarka Bakodesh, and this is a debate, says, can a person really understand in this world the purpose of creation? Can a person really understand in this world why the best thing Hashem did for his neshama was to create him? Are we able to actually internalize that? Now that's a chokhmah panimius. That's something beyond the realms beyond. Is there any way that we can get to grips with that, get to grasp with that, so that that motivates us with an understanding? Beis Hillel, Kedarka Bakodesh, said yes. We can. The human being is capable of that. He's capable of it bit by bit, stage by stage. A person can appreciate, can understand why they've been created, and that will motivate them. This is a debate. What is it that will motivate them? That will motivate them. Beis Shammai says no, it is impossible for a human being in this world to really have a significant enough appreciation of the purpose of it all, why we're here, in a sense of what's best for our neshama, what really is in our best interest. It's impossible. A person will think, is unable to grasp that. They can't see the reality of it all. They can't see the positivity of it all at times. Therefore, says Beis Hillel, and in fact, Nimli v'Gomru, they had this debate. What should we teach people? How should we teach them to think? Is it possible to get to grips with this, internal knowledge or not? Nimli v'Gomru, the conclusion was, no, it's not possible. It's not possible for a person to really have an in-depth understanding as to what it's all about, and why it's right for us, and why even life's travails and difficulties are best for Hashem. It's impossible. Therefore, what should you do? What should you do? Act. Do. Simply. Act with conviction that there is meaning, even when it sometimes feels meaningless. Act with conviction. Act with absolute conviction that is the case. And that's what their conclusion was. You mashmish for myself. Just do. Just keep doing. That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. It's a nas of anishma. It's a nashma of existence beyond Har Sinai. It becomes a motif for life. Nas of anishma. We'll do and eventually we'll get some hasaka. But initially we just do, just do, just do. Says Rav Desta, two words. Essentially, these words are quite difficult to translate because they're normally used in a different context. Ein Breira. Ein Breira. Ein Breira. Now, in Israeli society, Ein Breira is used as a kind of fatalistic thing. Ein Breira, there's no choice. He doesn't mean it in those terms. He means, Ein Breira means a person has to know that this is what it's all about. We have to do, because that's what Kol Shebroch Hu asks us to do. Not with a sense of fatalism, but a sense of absolute conviction. Sometimes, as is not to reason why. Ours is simply to do, to move forward, to keep going, with the knowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created us for this purpose, and that's what we have to do. With complete conviction, even when it doesn't feel, even when we can't motivate ourselves internally, and a sense of absolute and complete conviction carries us forward. If that is the case, says Rav Desta, sometimes when we act beyond rationale, because that's what we're talking about, when we act with that total sense of conviction, then what happens is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds with a gift of Ruchnius, which is beyond our intellect. When we act beyond our conviction, beyond our intuition, when we act beyond our understanding, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu then responds to us with a gift beyond our intellect. A gift beyond intellect. It's a quid pro quo. In response to our conviction, Hashem says, fine, you're going beyond. You're going beyond, then I will respond with a gift that really doesn't belong to this world. It belongs to the next world. Both in terms of our avoda, our actions, we get siyata deshmaya beyond our ability to do, and we get an uplift beyond our ability that we thought we could do, but also in terms of our hasagas, sometimes, here and there, in terms of our understanding of this world, our perception of this world, Hashem says, you've gone beyond that, I will go beyond that. And I will give you the gifts beyond that which you thought you could achieve, because that's what you have done in your commitment to me. Brings very beautifully, Kapitel Yud Gimel, from Tehillim, so it's, which really says it all. Where David HaMelech says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Adonai Hashem tishkacheni netzcha. When will you forget me? How long will you forget me for? Adonai atasties panach meni. How long will you hide your face from me? Expression after expression. Adonai oshies etzus panafshi. Until when must I set schemes with myself? Yogum bilvavi yomam. I feel sadness in my heart daily. All these expressions of woe and despair, and what am I going to do? And where are you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I don't see you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't understand you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where are you? And then, these are all rhetorical questions. Then he finishes off, Ani b'chastecha v'tachti, I had trust in your kindness, yogel libi b'shuasecha, my heart will exult in your salvation. What's David HaMelech's conclusion? After all these existential questions about where is God and what is he doing and where is it, how are we supposed to understand it? Ani b'chastecha v'tachti, I express a trust, b'tachon, I'm going to keep going, and then, yogel libi b'shuasecha. If I keep going at some stage in the future, yogel libi b'shuasecha, my heart will rejoice with your salvation. If I keep going externally, at some stage, that will trigger a sense of who I am internally. That is what happens. And that, lemaisa, is the yesod of Chanukah. That, of course, the Chashmonaim took on overwhelming odds. It was ridiculous. That battle was ridiculous. On paper, it was ridiculous. If you read the history of Hanukkah, we know they never had more than 10,000 troops against a Greek army of 67,000 troops, a well-trained Greek army. In their first battle of 4,000 troops against 47,000 troops, three major battles they had. Each of them are by overwhelming odds. But how did they do it? How could they do it? They said to themselves, Ein Brera, this is who we are, and how is it going to work out? How are we going to achieve this? I don't know. But we know 100%. But we have to keep going. We have to do. The rest is not in our hands. If we do, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will respond with gifts beyond our imagination. And therefore, the Teretz is as follows. The nace was not a necessary nace. Correct. In terms of halacha, it wasn't necessary. In terms of salvation, it wasn't necessary. Nothing to do with salvation. The nace was a ruchnius gift beyond that which was necessary, in response to their action beyond that which was conceivable. When they went beyond rationale in their conviction for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with an ein brera, a sense of this is who we are, this is what we must do, the response to that was a nace beyond what was necessary. The nace was an endorsement of their action and a ruchnius gift that made Hanukkah a world of eight. The gift of eight, dimension of eight in a world of seven. They achieved beyond that which they thought they could achieve, both in their action and in their hasagra as well. It struck me that, you know, if you think about it, sometimes in life we have to ask ourselves, you know, often in Yiddishkeit it says, Al kein yomra moshe bo cheshbon. We're supposed to think and contemplate, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to act? And yet on other occasions, it seems that the correct thing is just to jump in. How are we supposed to know when to jump in and when not to jump in? So really the difference is quite straightforward. When we're unsure what to do, we have to think. When we know what's supposed to do, the worst thing to do is to think. How many times do you hear an inspirational Joshua, maybe at the Torah way, or an appeal for stocker of some sort, thinking, you know, I really must respond to that. By the time you get in the car, you know, listen to the headlines, get home, it's all gone. The inspiration dissipates. Sometimes we just have to act. Just have to act straight away. How's it going to work out? I don't know, but I just have to do. This, I have to say, is my Hosophia, I'll judge it for itself. Where was the precedent for such a type of action? Where was the precedent for such a type of action where you just get in there and just do what has to be done, even though you've got no idea whatsoever how it's going to work out? Nachshon Ben Aminadab. Very good. On the first day of learning from Hanukkah, who do we meet on the first day of learning from Hanukkah? The gift, Nachshon Ben Aminadab. To my mother, almost that says to us that if we do beyond that which is beyond which we can see, but we know we're doing it for the right reasons, then we unlock ruchnius gifts beyond our asavas. And even in those moments where we are perhaps struggling in ruchnius or struggling with darkness, and we're not sure how to rationalize, how to feel our way through, how to grope our way through, action is the best antidote. If we act, even when we don't feel, then we become connected to things beyond our sagas. I just want to finish off with one episode I saw of this myself in a modern day Gezeiras HaShemad. And that, of course, was Soviet Russia. I'm sure there are many in this room who, back in Soviet Russian days, were there. I know from Mr. Hirsch's book, Ernie Hirsch's book, with all the pictures of those of us who went in those days, aged a bit all of us since then. But I was there actually, Pashas Miketz over Chanukah. I was there Pashas Miketz over Chanukah some 28 years ago or so. And I met, amongst the various remarkable personalities that I met there, I met a young father and son. The son was called Meir, and he was about 17 years old. His own parents had made him ill, deliberately, so that he would avoid conscription. Avoid conscription. They made him ill deliberately to avoid conscription. When I met him, the father and son were learning Pashas Miketz. Pashas Miketz. They had a cash on the Pasha, which they had no one to ask. No one to ask then. We don't think about it. No one to ask at all. So, and this was their kasha. They said it looks from the Pasha as though it's only a famine in grain. Only a famine in grain. And everything else seemed to be fine. Vegetables and meat and fish. Didn't really understand that it meant there was a complete famine and everything was going to be ruined. But they saw it to be only a famine in grain. And they couldn't understand how a famine in grain could constitute a famine. So the only test they could come up with is maybe to go without grain for a long period of time is such a painful experience that feels like a famine even if you have other things to sustain you. So how were they going to prove that? So Meir, this 17-year-old, decided he was going to go without any grain whatsoever. I think it was for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Why? Just to find Peshat in Chumash. He said to me very sweetly that his mother, it was very difficult for him because his mother made very nice biscuits. So for 3 or 4 weeks he went without those biscuits, just to find Peshat in Chumash. It's unbelievable. Just to find Peshat in Pasuk, and no one else to ask. So, it's, and what is that? That is the innate ability of Klal Yisrael to go beyond boundaries. To say, I don't know how to do this, but this is what we have to do, to go beyond boundaries. What was that? To go beyond boundaries with a real determination that this is what we have to do. This is what we have to do beyond that moment of intuition, to go beyond boundaries. And therefore, if a person goes beyond boundaries, the gifts of ruchnius that a person can achieve are lemalem and ateva. Lemalem and ateva. We go lemalem and ateva. The gifts of ruchnius are lemalem and ateva. So we should be zocher to take from Chanukah the technique which is useful for the whole year round, especially in those times when we don't feel so spiritually inspired, to know that if we act with utter determination and conviction, Kosh Baruch Hu responds with ruchnius gifts beyond our imagination.